we present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The Guardian, read by Harriet Cass.
Christine Hemming denied theft from the home of Emily Cox, a researcher with whom her husband fathered a daughter in 2005 during a brief hearing at Birmingham Crown Court.
Our thanks to Dave Gadd for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Fred McCauley and Danielle Ward. And opposite them on my left, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Hardy. Fred, why might a vote on prisoners' rights have broken the law?
It's going to put us at odds with the European Court on Human Rights, because Europe has decided that by excluding a convicted killer from the democratic process, we are denying him his human rights. And I want to say something to this audience here, just to gauge the reaction. If you're a convicted killer, haven't you yourself removed yourself from the democratic process? Now, hang on. There was a ripple of applause there. If I'd been Carol Vorderman and this was question time, you'd have been on your feet.
So you agree with it, don't you? You agree that they shouldn't be allowed to vote?
Well, I think I'm going to be kind of taking the middle ground. I think some should be excluded from the democratic process. And incidentally, I mean, if you think that the vote is something that is so precious, I'd like to ask why two-thirds of the MPs didn't actually bother voting in it. If I'd been Carol Vorderman and this was...
Given the number of MPs who are now going to prison, you'd think they'd be quite keen on that.
All right, so who's he?
I'm not allowed to vote. I mean, not because I'm a criminal, because I'm Danish.
Fair enough.
There is a difference.
It's one and the same thing for the Tories now.
Yeah, it is.
don't you have a universal franchise in Denmark?
Well, in Europe, I mean, anybody can vote. And in fact, they can become Prime Minister of Italy. It's even criminals.
There is a pressure group of reformed criminals called Unlock. And their chief executive said that the prisoners are actually... they reckon more politicised than the general public because they read all the newspapers and listen to Radio 4 all day long. And that's why they don't reoffend. Can you imagine? Inside, and all you've got is gardener's question time, the shipping forecast, the weather. Hi, it's 23 degrees and it's fair. Outside.
Is it all votes that they are exempt from? I mean, for instance, can they still, you know, put their tuppence in for X Factor and Britain's Got Talent and Strictly?
Or the important stuff, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think they also suggested that if we keep denying prisoners the vote, they will riot. I visited prisons, and can I just say to the guys that I know in C Block, in Perth Prison, that the guys in A Block think you're all nonsense. So... let's see if the next riot has to do with voting or not.
Your last prison visit lasted 6 years, didn't it?
The House of Commons has voted to deny prisoners the right to vote. Some characterised the vote on Thursday as being about whether the UK government can hold its own or whether it will bow to the European Court. To translate that for anybody listening from jail, they can either vote against the ruling or become Europe's bitch. 2 points to Fred. Danielle, who's made some money appear out of thin air?
Is this about Tory funding?
No, although we might come on to discuss that.
Is this the Merlin? Yes. Operation Merlin.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What do you know? Anything? Are you interested in finance at all?
Yeah, no, I was the economic researcher at the Korean embassy. No, I've had a proper job. Oh, no. It's amazing.
First of all, how did you get a job like that, to be the economic advisor for the Korean embassy?
There was an advert in The Guardian. I responded. And mainly, I had to organise visits to places like the Job Centre Plus because the Treasury would never have any visits from us.
Was it the North Korean embassy?
Oh, it's the South Korean embassy I worked for. It's the Republic of Korea, whereas the North Korean embassy is the Democratic. If they have to put democratic in the title of a country, it generally isn't. That's how it works.
It's weird, because at the same sort of time, I was responsible for... speaking to the head of finance in Lithuania. So they're also just giving out jobs to people who've got no economic... I had to ring up. I immediately made head of a mergers and acquisitions department, and I had to ring Tallinn and say, can I speak to the Minister of Finance? And he went, I am Minister of Finance. And I go, hello, would you like to merge or acquire?
they, you know, the worst thing I did when I was there, I once called Peter Mandelson Mr. Mandela, which was...
You know,
really quite a mistake.
Because yeah. You were an actual accountant, weren't you, Fred? You were.
I was, yeah. I failed my CA exams, but I worked for 12 years as an accountant from the age of 20 to 30. But in 10 years' time, George Osborne is going to be sitting as a panellist in the news quiz saying, you'll never believe the job they gave me once.
I worked in the accounts department for Wandsworth Sewer as one of my temping jobs, and it was my job to work out which receipts were important and which were not, and all I did was 1 in 10 went in the bin. That was my system.
I've never done a day's work in my life.
Sorry, Project Merlin.
Project Merlin. Oh, yeah, about the bankers and banking reform. The thing is, they've said that we've put a levy on the bankers' tax, but it's actually they're paying less tax than they did last year in total.
The banks made a really feeble effort to sound like that they were really upset, because Osborne must have said, look, just act like I'm hurting you. I'm not going to really hurt you, OK? But just when I make the announcement, go, oh, stop it, you're hurting, just like that. They've got about two bankers on the radio to say, this is an outrage. Banking will not survive these stringent, horrible demands that the government is placing. Is that all right? Yeah, that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of thing.
George Osborne has announced the results of several weeks of talks on lending and bonuses between the banks and the government, known as Project Merlin. Small firms, in particular, have complained about the difficulty of getting funding. Tell me about it. OK, Andy Hamilton and I set up a company selling news quiz action figures. actual size. And could we get a backer? No. So 2 points to Danielle. Sue, why might your 1-to-1 be replaced by a 1-1-1?
Yes, a 1-1-1 is going to be the new number to call to get a GP's appointment. Easy to remember. Just think of Prince Charles with a stammer. And you basically will no longer ring your local GP because things are going to be hugely centralised. So you'll ring NHS Direct. But it's a shame because I rather like the GP's waiting room. I like the ambient germ pool. I like the screaming child. I like the latent stench of urine that may or may not be coming from oneself. I like I like the idea that you go and you come back with something you'd never expected, like kwashiorkor or something interesting. I like the fact that you can catch up with what happened in celebrity culture in 1975. You know, essentially they're saying that a call centre can meet all these needs, but it's the sort of beginning of the end. I mean, what next? Operations by phone, where you're put on hold and listen to Coldplay, and eventually someone says, what is it? And you say, wisdom teeth, and they tell you at what angle you need to smash the phone into your face.
Apparently the number, the 111, was devised after the public asked if they could have something a bit easier to remember than the current 0845 number. Now, if you can't remember four numbers in a row, you shouldn't really get through. It should be like natural selection, shouldn't it? You shouldn't...
I rang up NHS Direct once and I was sort of having these sort of tremors, and the woman at the end of the phone ran through a few sort of cursory things like, you know, are you hearing voices? And no, not in the last 15 minutes when I've been on hold. And the last one was, and are you conscious?
I think it's a shame to lose the receptionist.
Yeah.
Because the only time I've been to the doctors recently, I had a little mole removed from the top of my arm and they stitched...
Did you find it in the garden?
they stitched it up. And then I was in Sainsbury's.
Just tell me that's not where you were having it stitched up.
And I reached to get something and the scar tissue split open.
Oh!
Yeah, so I was left with this massive open wound at the top of my arm. And then I had to go to the doctors and they went, what's wrong with you? Lifted up my sleeve and there's this gaping hole. And everybody went, ugh. You don't get that on NHS Direct, the phone line.
No, nothing. No.
They miss all the visuals.
Picture phone, you can. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Bring them up drunk and say, what do you think of this then?
Just for, are we any receptionists in? Anybody that works for a GP as a receptionist? Anybody in that works for a GP in the reception area? Anybody that might answer the phone of the GP? Anybody in? Is there anybody in that works for the GP? Anybody in that works as a receptionist as the GP? Anybody? Is there anybody in? Anybody in that works for a GP as the reception? Because you've got to give them time to answer. Do you know what?
I've phoned 118 once because they say you can ask them anything, and I asked them if they could take those annoying men with moustaches off my television.
I rang King's once and launched into a great long description of some test results that I needed, only to find out it was King's florists in Clapham that I was...
Under plans
I'm booked
being
for a Buglia transplant.
Under plans.
Did they take a cutting?
Under plans being drawn up for NHS Direct, patients will have to dial 111 to book a GP appointment through a call centre. The director of NHS Direct, Dr. Brian Gaffney, said the scheme could also syndicate online health and symptom checkers to other websites. Can you imagine if it was syndicated to Amazon? You've been diagnosed with hemorrhoids. Customers with this condition also bought cushions. Jeremy, whose sobriety test has been put on ice?
Ah, Her Majesty's Police Force have been asked by the Forensic Science Service, who are the boffins who know how to get blood, egg and sweat out of suede. The government has recognised that there's major things that can be cut. There's a lot of fat that can be cut from criminal justice, things like the evidence, things like that. So they're being wound up, and nobody has yet taken on the job of analysing the nasty stuff, the fluids, basically. So they've rung the police and said, can you just pop it in the freezer? Because the police have got this backlog, mainly from drink driving things. My favourite ever moment in the history of British sitcom was in Whatever Happened to the Likely Lads, when Rodney Bewes, playing Bob, had been stopped for drink driving, and the police officer said to him, blood or urine, sir? And he said, just a cup of tea, please. In the future, there might be somebody to analyse it, and they will uncover it. Archaeologists will dig up police stations and think, what weird people these were, making horrid-tasting lollies.
Is there a best before date for blood?
You can make it into a pudding. What you do with the wee, I don't know.
No idea.
Use it for dye.
Do you?
In Harris Tweed.
What colour's your urine?
Tartan colour.
Sorry, I haven't understood this at all. This before they make the tweed? Do they wee on the wool? Or they wee on the skirt?
They don't wee on it. I mean, it's not a kind of game.
This is all before it makes the shop, presumably.
They collect it in buckets and then they soak the wool in the buckets.
Did they just go around Glasgow on a Saturday night? It's human wee.
It's Harris Tweed. It's the Outer Hebrides where they speak predominantly.
That doesn't make it all
Gaelic.
Right, darling. Police forces are having to temporarily refrigerate samples of blood and urine taken from drunk drivers after the Forensic Science Service withdraws its testing facilities ahead of its closure in 2012. I actually owe my life to the Forensic Service. They once found me when I was lost in a particularly thick shag pile carpet. Very grateful. So 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round one, the scores are Fred and Danielle have got 4 points, but so too have Sue and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the Bournemouth Daily Echo.
Comfy single flatlet, quiet house, virgin available.
Thanks to Dorothy Bennett for sending us that. Fred, who bagged herself some baddies this week?
Is this the lady who took on some robbers who were trying to smash a window?
Anne Timpson.
Some people are saying well done, others are saying, might not be the right thing to do. But the good thing about this was it was filmed. She's obviously gone past and seen something untoward going on, and she swings her hand back at these ne'er-do-wells who are smashing a jeweller's shop window, or they're trying to, with sledgehammers, and she clobbers one with her handbag, and they decide it's time to scarper her. So I think, regardless of whether we should have a go or not, we commend her for doing that. But I think we should also commend, and I'm assuming it was a bloke, who, during all of this, the old lady tackling six blokes... continued to film without any thought of his own well-being.
I like this. Apparently this woman, Anne Timpson, said she had a history of fighting crime in Northampton.
She's given away her secret identity now.
She could have been Catwoman forever. She blew it.
What do you think the council do if they want her help? Do you think they project a sort of giant tea cosy in the sky?
They obviously were scared of her when she ran towards them. Because people think, it's a pensioner, it's an old lady. You think, these are people who've been to a jumble sale, aren't they? Anybody who's seen somebody of her age in a tussle over a lamb's wool cardigan knows you don't mess with those elbows.
What you don't see from the footage as well is she's just slightly moistening with her tongue a tissue and just preparing to wipe a little bit of dribble from one of the attacker's mouths.
She did have that enraged look of an old person who spotted somebody who's come out without their vest on. Have you been to... anybody been to Northampton?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the most exciting thing, I think, that has happened in Northampton since the Shoe Museum extended the run of the flip-flop exhibition. I, as it happens, went to the flip-flop exhibition. I learned two things. One is that Australians call flip-flops thongs, and the second thing is never go to a shoe museum.
Shoes were invented in Northampton.
They were.
The only street brawl I've been involved in was in Northampton.
Did you have a go?
What were you doing?
You know, we've all got, like, our only street brawl story.
No. No, honestly, no.
It's all happening above your head, Sandy. You just need to look up.
But yeah, it was really exciting. It was, like, scrapping in the street. We had to be pulled apart and everything. Northampton's very exciting. You have to make your own entertainment, obviously.
Mainly of a fighty nature, by the sounds of it.
I did once. I was on a train. I was on a first-class train to Dorking. And,
another perfect Radio 4 sentence.
There were some boys who I think had got in the wrong compartment, and they, and they were beginning to have a little set-to with one another, and I stood up and I said, "That will do." And they sat down all the way to Dorking.
So you're probably terrified because they heard a voice but couldn't for the life of them see where it came from. Has anyone seen The Polite Robber on the telly? I think it's on the BBC website. There's a polite robber in America and holds up a petrol station. And he gets out his gun and he says, "Could you put the cash right there, sir, please? This is a robbery. I'm robbing you. Please put all your money there." He says, "I'm so sorry to be doing this, but I'm having hard times keeping the roof over my head and I got kids. And if I ever get back on my feet, I'll bring this money back to you." And then the guy gives him the money and says, "God be with you." And the robber says, "And God be with you too." And leaves. It's beautiful.
Well, I now have decided I know what I'm going to do. If I find somebody in my living room at 2:30 in the morning having smashed their window with a brick, I'm just going to go, "You realise that you could be removing yourself from the democratic process."
Anne Timpson, a 70-year-old grandmother from Northampton, stopped a jewellery raid by attacking the six sledgehammer-wielding robbers with her shopping bag. In an interview, Anne Timpson, who hit the thieves with her purse, said she sometimes uses a wheelchair. But that's painful. 2 points to Fred. Danielle, listen to this. Danielle, if music be the food of love, whose dinner made him sick to his stomach?
This is... Is it the Queen's composer?
It is.
Who walked out of a restaurant because he objected to the music being played in. First of all, you think, oh, I've got some sympathy for that because, you know, it's nothing worse than being in, like, a lift and there's a horrible Casio keyboard version of, like, Rhinestone Cowboy being piped through or something. But then it turns out that he just objects to music that isn't being played by a string quartet in every shop he goes into. Like he's expecting an accordion player in Dixon's or something.
It would be great, though, instead of having piped music in lifts, if you had to have live music. I think it would be... Don't you think? I mean, if you didn't have more than a string quartet, you wouldn't be able to get in, but I just think it would be...
I like the idea of... But I saw the idea of live, and I thought people just pretending to put you on hold, so thinking... I'll just do 10 minutes of this, see how long this takes. Yeah, they're still there. I was thinking it would be very funny. I'd like that job if anyone's offering it.
Wasn't he objecting? Didn't he walk into Broadcasting House? Mm. Obviously, the building we're in. And he said that when he was in the entrance hall, they were playing music. And he's going, "Oh, it's awful. I nearly walked out." They were just broadcasting the radio station you're stood in. Like, the only place you can go, the only pub you can go to that doesn't play music is Wetherspoons. Would he like to go to Wetherspoons for his lunch? Probably not.
Wetherspoons, on technical points, got the same atmosphere as Jupiter.
When you say he's the Queen's composer... Does he write her special tunes that only she gets to hear, or does he just compose her when she's all antsy?
Oh. I don't know what's wrong with me. I've got ants in my pants. I don't know how I'm going to give this Christmas message. I'm all jumpy. I'm probably start stuttering like my grandfather. I don't know what's wrong with my father. I don't know what's going on. You say, "Shut it, sit down." "Oh, OK."
Composer Sir Peter Maxwell Davies walked out of an Italian restaurant because he couldn't stand the background music. Sir Peter is a supporter of Pipe Down, a campaign group fighting the insidious menace of piped music in public places. Interviewed on Radio 3, the station most likely to attract the activist, Sir Peter said that listening to Muzak was like being interrogated in Guantanamo Bay. He was there promoting his new CD, Now That's What I Call Waterboarding. 2 points to Danielle. Sue, what ban could make Belgium even more boring?
This is the sexy times. This is... the Belgians can't form government. Look, it's not a euphemism. They... they can't. They have...
Keep talking with the accent. I like the
accent. Shandy, it's so good to see you. Ooh. They've got... We've got problems because we've got a coalition. Come on, Sandy. It's not the first time you've heard me do it. They've got 7 or 8 parties trying to form a government, and they are taking longer to pin this government down than even the Iraqis. So it's a way of trying to get them to sit down in the same room and form a decent government going forward. One of the MPs, I think a woman called Temmerman, who's not only an MP, but also because she's Belgian, she's a gynecologist. So basically she said that there should be a sex ban. She said that Belgian wags, just think Poirot, but with breasts, are not to sleep with their husbands until they sort themselves out. And the idea of men who've been deprived of sex being in a locked room together, that's a powder keg. And
But they've been without government for how long?
243 days.
And are they managing okay?
Seems fine, actually.
Better than we are.
Maybe they should carry on as an experiment with no government and just see how they do.
241 days of negotiation between the parties. Belgian waffle, apparently. Mm.
Would I be pushing it too far, Sue, because I do enjoy your accent, to ask for a bit of Dutch so that I can determine the difference between... Is that too much?
Dutch is sort of much more clipped, actually. You find it's a little bit more Germanic, and whereas the Walloon is a much more loose kind of dirty, guttural sort of sound.
That's Droitwich you're doing.
There's a very good quote from one of the Belgian MPs, Catherine Funk.
Language.
She's got her funk on.
Funk. Who said, I don't want to take part in a sex strike. On the contrary, politicians are there to arouse the country. After being without a government for 243 days, the spouses of Belgium's feuding politicians have been urged by Senator Marlene Temmerman to go on a sex strike until a deal is reached. Belgium has now broken the European record for the longest time elapsing without a government, and it will break the world record by next Thursday. There are those who think this may just be a very elaborate ploy by Belgium to appear interesting. 2 points to Sue. Jeremy, who'll be saying, text me, Father, for I have sinned?
This is the I Pope, is it?
It is, yes.
Ah, yeah. Now, you see, this is the most exciting computer development to come out of Rome since the I Claudius. Yeah. It's, so I'm not that familiar with popery, although it makes the lab smell better. it's... Yeah, here's another one, lady. But anyways... if you've got an iPhone, there's an app, which I believe is short for application, which is a perfectly reasonable word. I don't think needs to be abbreviated, but apparently it does in the same way that rep needs to be repeated. If you're at the gym, you have to say rep. How many reps did you do? When you could say, how many did you do? So it's actually an abbreviation that doesn't need to be said. But application is now short for app, and you have apps on your phone, and one is you can use it to make a confession.
Just to keep track.
Yeah, apparently. You go
keep
on and you say, I've done this. Oh, does it save them for
it
you?
It saves them for you.
Then you're saved yourself.
Yeah. You can back up yourself.
You can keep. So if you commit, you know, 7 sins in a row, I think you get an 8th one free. I think it's a sort of...
What if you stole the phone? Do you then...
That would be your first thing to put
in. Yeah, but do you then acquire all the sins of the person that you stole it from? Like in Conkers?
I think that's Buddhism. I think that's the Buddhism app. But also, do you think it's a little bit ironic that they're doing this for an iPhone? I mean, wasn't it an Apple that got us all into trouble in the first place?
I think it was actually a quince, Susan.
So there's no sliding scale with the confession. I don't understand it. And I haven't been a Catholic for many years. But anyway, you go into a small booth and there's a man there and he says, what have you done? And I remember I went twice in my entire life. And the first time I told a white lie and I said that I'd lost my homework. He said, right, well, you must do 40 Hail Marys and 5 Our Fathers. And 6 months later, I went back and he said, what have you done? And I said, well, I've got a younger sister. She's 6 years younger than me. And I tied her arms and her legs together with hi-fi leads and I put her in the laundry basket and I drop-kicked her down 4 flights of stairs. He said, you've been very bad. You must have 40 Hail Marys and 5 Our Fathers. It's no sliding scale. Or it proves that he's met my sister. It is very odd. And but you can't... I don't think the app means that you get absolved. I think the absolution bit is another download. But you just get to basically write to yourself onto what you've done, and then I suppose you take it in and download it in front of a priest.
Where's it going to end, though? Tweet me, Father, for I have sinned. The Vatican has approved an iPhone app that allows users to make confession with a virtual priest over the internet. The app offers a personalised examination of conscience for each user, and if you're too busy for that, it'll just go through your browsing history and tut. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. McCauley.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. We've got something from Julian Burnside, who's all the way from Melbourne in Australia, and he enjoys the news quiz and has sent me in details of an holiday. It's advertised as situated in the Tonkin Gulf. Halong Bay is one of the world's natural wonders, a bay with more than 3,000 islands, which time, wind and waves have sculpted into fantastic shapes. And down here it says, trip information, activities, boat trip and walking. Highlights, boat trip.
Ms. Ward.
This is an advert cutting from Antonia Goddard. For sale, mixing bowl set designed to please a cook with round bottom for efficient beating.
Ms. Baggins.
And this was sent in by, I think it says, John Woodford Robinson. Fantastic! High-speed stunts with motorcycles, 15-foot-high trucks and a tank-crushing car was the order of the day when the Monster Stunt Spectacular visited Northampton at the weekend. The rules of the road were nowhere to be seen at this crazy event, which attracted a large crow to Midsummer Meadow.
Mr. Hardy.
This is from The Telegraph, and it was sent in by Brian Wheaton of the Wirral. It's one of those moments you pray it never happens to you, having your mobile phone go off during a funeral service. But one mourner at a church in East Sussex had cause to be doubly embarrassed recently when his handset shattered the solemn atmosphere with a rather unfortunate choice of ringtone, the Bee Gees hit Staying Alive.
Let's take a look at the final score. Sue and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners with 13 are Fred and Danielle. Before we leave you, here is a Valentine offer from The Guardian, sent to us by Dr. Felicity Granger.
The greatest love letters of all time, from Queen Victoria to Emily Dickinson, and from Oscar Wilde to Beethoven.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Fred McCauley, Danielle Ward, Sue Perkins and Jeremy Harding. In the chair was Sandy Toxvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Simon Littlefield and Roger Crooks, with additional material by James Keppel and Tom Neenan. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.